Okay, hello everyone, and welcome to session number 166, the Mama Dragon Story Project. I am your moderator, Katie Langston. It says Chelsea Shields in the program, but that's not me. You probably have heard all these announcements already all day. Keep cell phones off, be nice and kind in the questioning period, buy stuff, etc. This session is 60 minutes long. And I'll read the abstract for the presentation and a bio, and we'll get started. A message of unconditional love is the cause the Mama Dragons fight for. They seek to protect and defend their LGBT plus children against the onslaught of dogma inflicted by both religion and society. The Mama Dragons are predominantly Mormon or have a Mormon background, but the group does not limit itself to members of a particular faith. All are welcome, including those who have abandoned organized religion altogether. Part of a larger ethos in the religious community of mothers loving their LGBT plus children, the Mama Dragon's message meshes seamlessly with many other faith communities across the world. And our presenter is Kimberly Anderson. Her most recent long-form documentary project is concentrating on outreach and suicide prevention among LGBT plus youth. Anderson has a BA and an MFA from Utah State University, has exhibited widely both nationally and internationally, and has worked in various collections throughout the Intermountain West.
Thank you for coming. When that bio gets read, I start to sound like super important and super impressive. But I will say this, I can add another line to my bio. I got accepted yesterday into the University of San Francisco's master's program to become an LMT. Is that what I'm getting? MFT, I'm sorry. Yeah. So I'll be working with kids, families, et cetera, moving forward. Since I'm doing this anyway, I figured, you know what, I might as well get some training, learn how to do it right, do it in San Francisco where there's lots of stuff going on. And we'll move forward in the proper way. That being said, none of that training matters when all you really care about is love. You don't need training to love your kids. I think you need training to learn how to offer clinical therapy. I don't think you need training to offer your children love. About a year and a half ago, about 2 years ago, I met these Mama Dragons and started learning their stories, hearing their stories. And I thought, you know, someone needs to be cataloging these, recording these. Someone should be photographing these women and making an archive or a library of what these people are doing. Their stories of love and acceptance for their LGBT kids, unfortunately, are outside the realm of what we normally see a lot of times in organized religion. So at the time I'm teaching, or for the past several years, I've been teaching adjunct at various universities across Utah. And at UVU, I teach a class called documentary photography. And in that class, I tell my students, when you're at the intersection of a bunch of interesting events or topics or individuals, and you find yourself the only person that's available, that's qualified, and that's willing to do this documentary work, you really probably ought to stop everything else you're doing and jump into this and photograph it, make a story out of it, because it won't be recorded if you're the only one that's going to do this. And a lot of times in history, those opportunities come, no one records them, and they move on, and then we look back, and we want to know what happened, but there was no record made of how that period in history transpired. So my job as a documentary photographer, which I've been doing for the past 27 years of my life, I do various long-form documentary projects. My shortest project is this one, which has been about a year and a half. Other projects have been 5 years, 8 years. I've got a 20-year project on Great Salt Lake that I've been working on. So I like this idea of looking at a topic in depth over time. How do things change? How do they stay the same? As I met these moms and started learning their stories, I decided, you know what? I'm going to jump into the darkroom, break out the 5x7 view camera, which I didn't bring. Why is that not working? Wake up. So as a professor, you learn quite quickly that you need to have plan B and sometimes plan C. Oh, good. Plan A is working. Wonderful. Sometimes plan A doesn't work. I started photographing these women. I convinced 5 to sit for the camera, then 10, then 20. Before long, I'd shot 40. Before long, I'd shot 60. And I now have found myself, I've photographed 85-ish, 85-plus-ish women. And I consider the project closed at this point as far as photography is concerned. But I've recently met 2 additional women whose story really needs to be in the project. So the door's open just a little. But at some point, if you're going to publish a book, you need to quit production and you need to go to press. Right, Jay? So the deadline for shooting is over. Plus, I sold my home. The darkroom was in my home, and I no longer have access to a darkroom. Anyway, started photographing. And as I photograph these women, I pinky sweared with them. You will write for me a 1,000-word essay talking about the love that you have for your child, your journey to becoming this creature, this person that's decided that loving your child transcends any other issue in your life, any other consideration. And through the submission of these essays, I've heard many, many times, this is the most difficult thing they've ever written. And then it's been my job as an editor to take 1,000 words and trim it down even further and get it into about 525 words to fit this little space. So these women are distilling their life experience down to 1,000 words, which is brutal for them. And then I'm taking the part that talks about their turn, their before, their after. What happens in that turn? And I've put them in these stories. Out of the 85 women that I photographed, there are 20 in this small book with the goal of producing the entire volume sometime hopefully within the year. The goal was this fall with this University of San Francisco thing and life happening and, you know, how deadlines sometimes get pushed back. There's only a few that don't really get to move. That's what, Christmas and April 15th. But April 15th, if you're a small business owner, you can push that to October 15th, just so you know if you have a good accountant. This is my working copy. This copy got left on my door on the seat of my truck overnight in a deluge, and I woke up and I realized the window had been left down. I have 20 of these downstairs if you'd like to purchase. Oh, 18 left. I'm sorry. I sold 2 today. So these are available to be purchased if you'd like to purchase one. They're $25. This is not a sales pitch. If you want to contribute, that's fabulous. I also have a set of postcards that we've made, little promotional things. If you're familiar with Mormon culture, you might know what a leave behind card is. I made a little Mama Dragon leave behind cards. Anyway, the 4 women you see before you here, I try to get new women every time to present so that they can empower themselves with the opportunity to stand in front of an audience and speak their truth, so that they can internalize what they've written. Sometimes we hear it differently than we've written it. It's important, I think, to speak it and to hear it. I also think it's important not to use the same woman every time, because now we get an army of people that have stood in front of an audience and have spoken about things that are uncomfortable. In Mormonism, we're taught very early on to stand in front of an audience and think about things or speak about things that are comfortable. This is a little bit different. So Lisa Dame will be our first speaker. Come on up, Lisa.
When my daughter was 3, she had a favorite TV show called Today's Special. It was set in a department store where a woman named Jody would set up the displays. There was a mannequin named Jeff in the store who would magically come to life by placing a hat on his head. If the hat happened to fall off, then Jeff would freeze and become a mannequin again. My daughter would spend many hours pretending to be Jeff, and I would be Jody. She would make the hat fall off, freeze, and wait for me to put the hat back on her head. A As she became a teenager, she went through some very rough times when she seemed to be stuck or frozen in her life. I wish that I had a magic hat that I could place on her head to unfreeze her, to become free from the difficulties that plagued her. I prayed continually for her to be happy and joyous in the gospel. There came a very dark episode that I felt worried and scared for her. As I was praying about this, a feeling of amazing peace and stillness came over me. I heard the words in my head say, "Everything will be all right." I felt strongly that it didn't mean it would be all right the next day, the next week, or maybe even the next year. I knew that I needed to have faith and patience to wait for this. When she was in college, she found a man that she wanted to marry in the temple, and they set a date. When I saw them together, I could tell that she didn't want him to touch her. Something wasn't right. When she broke off the engagement, it confirmed to me something that I had known all along. I knew that my daughter was gay. I didn't tell anyone, but I was in mourning. I started the process of letting go of things that weren't going to be. There wasn't going to be a temple marriage to a returned missionary. She didn't date anyone for the next few years while she struggled with her sexuality. I felt powerless to help her through this. I prayed to have an opening to bring it up. When my daughter came home for a visit while she was in graduate school, I was prepared to tell her that I was ready to hear her truth. She was able to open up to me, told me that she was gay and in love with a woman she had met at school. We hugged and cried, and I felt such relief that she and I were both finally ready for this. After she left that day, I sent up a prayer of gratitude, and the feeling from long ago that everything is going to be all right returned to me. I knew then that this was the plan all along, that God was aware of her and of me. There is magic to be had in the raising of our children. The hat that we put on their heads to free them is love. My name is Lisa Dame, and I love my lesbian daughter.
Lisa was part of our very, very, very first public presentation that we held at the Utah Pride Center last fall. And I consider that a huge honor to have this project embraced on a huge level by the LGBT community here in Utah. We've presented at the center in Las Vegas, and we've presented at a church in Sacramento, an Episcopal church in Sacramento. The pastor that invited us is a gay man. We presented at an Episcopalian church in Seattle, Universalist Unitarian Church, led by a lesbian minister there. This effort seems to be finding a voice and some legs among the community that we're trying to express love to. Our next speaker is Lana Christiansen. You live in South Jordan? Okay, West.
Good afternoon. It's not like I didn't already know. Growing up, there were little things that my sweet boy would do. Mannerisms, just little things. Like the time that he was in the tub as a three-year-old, and he said to me, "Mom, what happens if Heavenly Father sends you to Earth in the wrong body?" That's a deep thought for a little three-year-old to have. But this was real. My sweet 14-year-old boy was confirming the words that echo in my mind and touch my heart. "Mom, I'm gay." And I know they would forever change the life that I thought he would have. A church service mission was not going to happen. A fairy tale wedding with a beautiful bride. And what about the grandkids? We shared tears and a deep heartfelt talk. And some guided words that I gave to my beautiful gay son. "Brig, you are one of the most amazing spirits that I know. I expect no less than you than I ever have. I want you to be a moral person. I don't want you to date until you're 16. I want you to be honorable in your courting, and I want you to get married. I want you to be with someone you love in a sacred union, just like you would if it were a girl. Gender doesn't matter. Gender doesn't change the way that I would like you to live your life. I want you to stay a chaste young man with good morals. I don't care what your orientation is. That truth remains. I am still I'm still his mom, whether he likes it or not, and I could tell I had stirred a lot of emotions and thoughts inside of him. "Of course, Mom," he says to me, "you know me." He is a beautiful and very chaste young man. I don't know what his life will be like, but I do know that I love my son, and I would be there for him every step of the way. In my heart, I wanted to be vocal. I wanted to come out with this publicly and support gay rights and the LGBT community. But I was cautious, and I feared judgment. When the Utah law passed supporting same-sex marriage, there was a large public reaction, as many of you know. Yet for the first time, I shared on my social network that I was grateful for this. I was grateful for this because now my son, who deserves the same rights as anyone else, will have them. Now, because of this, people unfriended me, both on Facebook and both in real life. And it hurt me very deeply. But something clearly mattered more. I chose my son and his happiness. I didn't have a name for it at the time, but I believe this day is the first day I sprouted wings and felt fire in my throat. I reached out to others, Mormons Building Bridges, shared a consciousness and approach to the young gay community and members and children, a group called Affirmation I found. I was searching on my own. And at this beautiful fireside that showed of one family who had embraced their gay son, because families are forever, was filmed and shown there and was filled with such a spirit of love. This was very impactful for my son, who attended with me. For the first time, he felt like there might be some place for him in the church. And this is at 18. Shortly after that, I found the Mama Dragons. I was timid at first. Still, I immediately felt the compassion of the other mamas who fiercely loved their LGBT plus children, and I was no longer alone. We all want the happiness and love our children deserve. And thus began my journey as a Mama Dragon. I look forward to a day of joyful tears that will fill my eyes when I watch my son marry his sweetheart, whoever he might be. There is no greater joy than watching our children grow and gain their own wings. This Mama Dragon will always be there to raise my children higher and to breathe a little fire whenever it's necessary. My name is Lana Christensen, and I love our LGBT plus community, and I love my gay son.
Danae Tyler.
From Highland?
Orem.
Ironically, my life as mom of two LGBTQ kids began on a Mother's Day. My husband was very ill, and he had asked my son for a blessing. Ben became very upset. He claimed he wasn't worthy, and he refused. When my husband questioned him, Ben revealed that he was gay. When I heard, my reaction was that I would always love him, and I felt he was perfect, just the way he was. Ben had struggled with self-esteem and depression for years before he came out, but now a great weight was lifted from his life. It was as if he'd been on a long and horrible journey and finally reached a place where he could rest. But for me, the journey was just beginning. When you have a son in the Mormon culture, there are a lot of expectations. Everything changes when your son tells you that he is gay. All I knew was that I wanted to help Ben. I spent many hours on my knees asking the Lord to help me find the way. And each time I felt that love was the answer. I eventually began searching the internet, but I still craved an actual listening ear. When I tried to talk to my parents, my mother's response was that he could still marry a girl. I have never felt so horribly alone in my life. Finally, I noticed that Affirmation was having a conference in Salt Lake, and I had the overwhelming impression that I needed to go. I was fearful. I'm very introverted, and I hadn't come out of my own closet as mom of a gay son. I asked my husband and son to go up with me. As we were driving, I had the distinct feeling that this was a milestone in my life that would change its course and there would be no turning back. As we met with parents who supported their kids, the love in that room was so incredibly strong. I will never forget how I felt and how filled I was after being so empty for so long. A mother there added me to the Mama Dragons. It's what I'd been praying for, a place where I was not alone on my journey, but was instead surrounded by strong sisters who had each other's backs. Soon I was also breathing Mama Dragon fire, and I was out, and I was proud as a mother of a gay son. I came to a very comfortable place, but a true story never really ends. The year after Ben told us he was gay, our son Caleb asked me, "How do you feel about transgender people?" "Well, I think they're great," I said. "I think that I am transgender," he said. That moment, I just thanked God for the knowledge that I had. And I put my arms around him and I said, "I love you. What do you want to do next?" Love was the answer to that question, and thankfully my capacity to love has grown exponentially from that fateful Mother's Day. I'm not always sure of where I need to go next, but I do know that I need to be guided by love and never by fear. I'm strong. I am a Mama Dragon. My name is Danae Tyler, and I love my LGBTQ kids.
Thank you, Danae, Lana, Cynthia, and Lisa. You can see why, as I heard these stories, I felt compelled to begin this project. I'm going to take off my photographer hat and put on my professor hat. And if you've seen the podcast and if you've been in one of these before, you kind of know what's coming next. I want to ask you some questions about these four narratives that you've listened to firsthand. Oh, we've only heard three. Who are we? Oh, holy cow. Shut up. Cynthia. And she's an ass kicker. She would not let me go by without skipping her.
Look at that face.
And she drove all the way down.
With that face.
She drove all the way down from Boise for this.
Right. April 1st, 2012, my oldest son came out to me. He was only 17, and it was General Conference Sunday. We'd spent all day watching. The words could hardly form on his lips as he sobbed, so I filled in the blanks for him, and he nodded yes, falling into a heaping mess into my arms on the floor. In that moment, I felt my mind physically expand. I felt divinity telling me that gay people are perfect. God didn't create abominations, just people. I knew the brethren were completely wrong about being gay. I knew that I loved my son. No teaching or belief mattered, just love. This was new to me, as I had always known what was right. And I knew what was right and wrong. And this didn't fit what I had always been taught to believe. We held each other and cried. I reassured him that I love him and that I accept him, and I knew that he is perfect as is. He was shocked after having been raised in a homophobic LDS home. I still went through a period of intense anger, self-blame, and disillusionment. I had done everything right as an LDS woman. I was conservative and obedient as a member of the church. I'd followed all the commandments, held regular family home evening, family prayer, scripture, hot dinner on the table every night. I had currently been serving as the Relief Society president. I attended the temple religiously. I didn't deserve to have a gay kid. It felt like a punishment in some ways. Had I been too overbearing as a mother? Where were the promised blessings? Did I make him have same-sex attraction? I could barely say the word gay. I promised not to tell a soul until he was ready to go public, if he ever did, and I suffered in silence. I needed and wanted support so badly, and I had no one to talk to. The social repercussions of coming out to my LDS community in Idaho would have been devastating. I eventually found the Mama Dragons, and they saved my sanity. It was a godsend to find other LDS women in the same situation I was in. The relief was palpable, and I felt a renewed sense of purpose. The healing balm of understanding was a salve to my scorched and aching soul. This son decided that he wanted to serve a mission and wanted to someday get married in the temple to a woman. He agreed to try reparative therapy. We found an LDS counselor in Idaho who had him masturbate to straight women-only porn. Throughout his youth, he'd had bouts of suicidal thoughts, and he was a tortured soul. The reparative therapy did not work. But he was doing better with parental support. Early into his mission, he and I both experienced our own massive faith crisis. He came home after 11 months, but still wanted to try and be straight. Now that I no longer believed the truthfulness or teachings of the LDS Church, I begged him to reconsider and to embrace his homosexuality, to live authentically as a gay man. Within a few months, he announced that he was going to do just that. Not long after, my 16-year-old daughter came out to me, also as gay. This time it was a much easier process. I and my five children are forever changed in all the best ways, freed from the burden of our previous beliefs. My name is Cynthia, and I openly breathe fire and truth for my children.
So I'm going to apologize for that, Cynthia. I'm sorry. Thank you for standing. You're the ones in the back. So now I get to play the professor and ask you some questions. Now you've heard four stories. Do they have elements in common? Are there themes that are similar running through each of them?
The answer is always love.
The answer is always love. And shouldn't we all tattoo that across our forehead? Like right now, I'm offering tattoos in the basement as well. The answer is always love. Thank you.
The importance of personal revelation.
Thank you. The importance of personal revelation cannot be understated, especially within the context of Mormonism. That's super important. It's also interesting to know or to learn that that aspect of personal revelation was with them whether they made a faith transition or whether they did not. That's important to understand.
I would say the sense of community. Every single one said I was looking for some more support.
A sense of community. Desperate to connect. Who can I turn to for help? After I heard story after story with that in common, it reinforced the idea to build this project was a good one. What else are we hearing?
The need to let go of guilt from a conservative background.
So guilt and shame are the two things I'm really tired of. And I will preach this idea of letting go of guilt and shame until the day I'm dead. I think those two things would radically change our entire LDS culture, which I've spent 47 years living within. What else? Jana?
I think we need to let go of labels.
Okay, letting go of labels. That's a good idea. Continue.
I mean, we're all just people that should love each other and embrace everybody, no matter what.
It's really hard to do that in a society that's so reliant on labels. What are our two major labels that are getting thrown around right now? Nazi and communist. Well, and that's kind of an extreme on both sides, but certainly Democrat and Republican. And right now it's extremely polarizing. What else do they have in common? Yes.
Well, this is I also heard the pain that each one of them faced, both with a change in their illusions or hopes, but also in the cultural context that they were, that there was had not been a kind of a role model to go to a human experience. And so, I mean, everybody's the same, but they have the common reaction of pain.
Pain. Does that sound familiar, ladies? And pain in kind of similar yet dissimilar ways. As I've done this project and kind of realized who I am as an individual, I've decided one thing about me, and that's I really don't care about you that much until I really truly understand that you have experienced some genuine pain. When I know that about you, we connect on a much deeper level, and my interest in you, my commitment towards you as a friend, really becomes real and really becomes solid. I think until we learn and through narrative and storytelling and story sharing, until we learn about each other's pain, we can't move past that superficial level of, how are things going? Brother Lambert, how are you doing today, Brother Lambert? Great. How are you doing, Sister Anderson? Things are great. Bullshit, bullshit. Right?
May have been universal that she got defriended, both on Facebook and other, that the judgments of that are a barrier, and that we need to change that, work toward changing ourselves and the world so that we don't defriend people that have a different experience.
So loss of friends who we probably at some point honestly, truly felt would be there for us through thick and thin. What was my first answer from the question? What did you say first?
Love.
Love is always the?
It's always the answer.
Love is always, repeat after me, love is always the answer.
Love is always the answer.
Yeah, tattoo again. Second answer, go. So when I hear that answer, thank you. When I hear that answer, I think about ego. That we hold on to our dreams for our children because of what? They are our dreams. This is my ego, my goal for my child, getting in the way of letting them be who they need to be. Once we let go of that ego, we kind of, they now can be their own person. Our love is expansive. Did your love expand, Danae?
Yes.
Lana? Cynthia, Lisa, like the Grinch, three sizes that day. We've all seen the cartoon, or more. What else? One more.
When my kids started making all kinds of fascinating choices, I realized, who am I to say they need to live my dream? Because that is what, I mean, we've got it all planned out in our mind, what should probably happen.
And isn't it within the LDS construct really super awesome to know at age 12 what's going to happen? And 14. Their dream, right. So that goes back to speaking to ego. Absolutely. And I love your interesting choices. How did you say that? Fascinating choices, thank you. Wow, that's pretty good. What, last one, one more. Yes.
I have a quick question, and it's believe me, just when your children told you the truth, did your church leaders tell you to not talk about it or share or keep it private? Were you encouraged to do that? Because that's what we're finding in Europe. Families are being isolated. They think they're the only ones in the state. And then when it does come out, usually in very sad circumstances, we find hundreds of people.
So let's hold that just for a minute. We'll do some Q&A in a few minutes. But so hold that question tight next to your heart. The thing that they all have, and thank you all, we're going to end the Q&A, or we're going to end this part right now. Quickly, lady in black.
Oh, I was just going to say that I heard all of them talk about how their personal growth and their level of assertiveness changed. And I think they all really felt growth in that area of being kind of that fire in the throat.
Fire. That's why kind of the mama dragon thing seems to work. The thing that they also have in common is that their children all decided to live openly as LGBT individuals. They decided to own their identity. They decided to live authentically within their society. And that freed the mother then to do what? To advocate openly for their child. Huge relief. Yes. Unfortunately, there is a tremendous number of women within Mormonism. When their children come out, they are sworn to secrecy. And you've heard a slice of that with these four women. As I met with more and more women, I thought, you know, this woman who cannot speak openly needs to have a place within my project. So I had one of these women who was still living as a closeted supportive mother. She wrote her essay. I had another woman sit for the camera, and we photographed her. And between the two, well, come on. How come we're here? There we go. Between the two of them, I came up with this composite character called the Unknown Mama, with apologies to the Unknown Soldier, because I don't want to diminish that honor, the honorable title. The Unknown Mama essay ends all of my presentations. After this essay is read, though, we will have a Q&A. The Unknown Mama will be read by Lisa Hacking.
My son is the best of human beings. As I write this, he is a 20-year-old serving a full-time mission for the LDS Church. 2 months before he left, I knew with deep certainty that something was making him unhappy. Son, if you're gay, you need to tell me. I can't bear the thought of you leaving for 2 years feeling like you have to hide this from me. You know that I will love you no matter what. And the tears came and my feelings were confirmed. In the days and weeks that followed, I saw the deepest sadness in my amazing son. I saw hopelessness. I saw real despair. I sat holding him and we cried many tears together. I learned of his struggle and prayers of bargaining with God to change him and the hopelessness that followed. I was literally afraid of the depth of his sadness. He was fragile and the mission was looming. We took him to the temple knowing full well that someday he may be excommunicated. We did not tell our church leaders for fear that any other fallout would devastate our son beyond repair. So we sent him to his foreign mission, and we hung on to him so tightly in every way we could. I suffered silently, not able to tell anyone in order to protect my son. My life was turned inside out. My children were devastated, not because their brother was gay, but because they fully knew that he would experience total rejection. My whole world is upside down. My family ties to the church are fragments. I am the mother of 5 kids, married for 23 years, and I have dedicated my life to Mormonism. I have poured everything I am into my role, my religion. There has been nothing else. And in one horrible tremor, it has all changed forever. The stress and the paradox is still more than I can handle. Minutes into hours, hours into days, days into weeks, weeks into months. With my mind caught in an endless trap of solving the unsolvable, a dark tunnel inside of which there is no light, no hope, no resolution, just darkness. My mind bends and struggles to see a way to fix that is what is broken, to restore what has been lost. It bends and twists until it is no longer my own mind. If this blackness and hopelessness is depression, then I am sorely depressed. Nothing can pull me from the darkness. Sundays are a hellish torment of everything that is wrong that cannot be fixed. I still cry uncontrollably. I have lost my hope. No one can see me because I am invisible. I am closeted. This is my darkness and my loneliness. This is being the Mormon mother of a gay son. This earthquake has torn my world apart. I am invisible in the closet surrounded by my own blackness.
It's hard to clap for that one, isn't it? This pain is real, which is not to diminish the pain felt by the LGBT individual who is closeted, who is struggling to come out and live their reality. That is a pain that those of us who are not in that community cannot understand. We can only try to understand. But the pain felt by these mothers that can't come out, or between that flash of an instant where their child does come out and they make this decision to love, that's a real hard space. The book is being used around the world, actually, right now by members in the church and people outside of the church. The Utah State Board of Health, or the Health Department, is it called the Health Department? Utah State Division of Health. We received a grant from them. They will be bundling this book with the Family Acceptance Project, Dr. Caitlin Ryan's research, moving forward in some various outreach efforts. Statistically, scientifically speaking, it is proven that the single greatest factor in the success, the whole wholesome upbringing and arrival into adulthood by these LGBT individuals, the single greatest factor is love and acceptance within the home. That's the basis of Dr. Ryan's work. In that vein, this book tries to give examples to that mom who might be struggling to make a place within their home to create that love so that their child can succeed and flourish. We'll take a few minutes. We've got 10 minutes left for Q&A-ish.
15. And just be sure to, because the session is being recorded, if you have a question, go up to the mic. Or
yeah, if you don't mind coming up, yeah. This will be like, you know, we're familiar with this concept of fast and testimony meeting. And if you sit there and don't come up for the first 5 minutes, guess who's going to smack you? Oh, wait, we already have our first question. This lovely gentleman with this fabulous accent, where is it from?
Scotland.
Come on up, yeah, and we'll turn the time over to these ladies.
It was a question on when this incident happened. You all talked about the support and the importance of that. Well, the experience mostly in Europe is that their church members are told not to share. It is a personal family burden, and it leads to a great deal of what I'd say is depression, anxiety. It's not just the LGBT person who's on medication or it's often the family too. Is that your experience that you're told to not share?
I'm not sure if this is exactly the same, but I do know that in the stake that I was in, my husband is very out and proud as the father of a gay son, and so a friend came to him and said, "You have a gay son?" He said, "I have a gay son too," and he said, "I went to our stake president and I asked him, you know, if we need help," and he said, "Well, as far as I know, you're the only person in the entire stake who has a gay child." So I know that's not true, but what I'm thinking is that they would like it if it would just go away. They don't want it to be well known. I mean, and they're not like making any effort to have outreach to the parents or even say, you know, this person might be a person you could talk to. They're very much in ignorance of what's going on. That's my.
I was sworn to secrecy, so I didn't tell my church leadership. Nobody knew until my son came out on his own. And then by then I was done. I didn't have to worry about that. I just suffered in silence without being told to be quiet.
And I actually didn't feel any need to ask any advice from my bishop or my stake president. I knew exactly what I needed to do.
Jenna Moffitt, a beautiful mama dragon.
Well,
come on up to the microphone. This needs to be recorded.
Sorry, I had an experience. When my son came out and we went to our bishop and stake president, what they said to me was, you know more about this than we do. They didn't know what to tell me. They didn't know what to say to me. No one had a book or a pamphlet or anything to give me for help. So this is where I got my information and my help and just trying to search out on our own. But going to our church leaders kind of didn't work for us. They didn't have anything to say.
Thank you, Jenna.
Yeah, I was just wondering, I know there's family fellowship. Is there any equivalent for Papa dragons? And how did your husbands respond to the same information?
Yeah, I know Brooke's husband does. There is a daddy,
dragon
dads. There is. So you'd have to, yeah, if you just message someone that's a mama dragon, they can get you in touch with, if you want to be a dragon dad, then that's definitely possible. So there are there. So my husband did, he's here today, and my daughter, and he was amazing, and just all his only response was, I want her to be happy. And that was, there was not ever a question of not complete, no support from him. I mean, he just completely supported her.
I think a lot of it comes from, there is the dads, and I don't know if that's a newer movement, the daddy dragons or the dad dragons, but my husband's also very supportive. But I was divorced from my husband when my gay son was 5, and my ex-husband, his actual father, is not supportive, and even now lives in the world of denial. Just don't talk about it. It's not true. And so I believe that definitely love is the answer. When I went to my church leaders, they thought that you could just change that it was a choice. That my son, they actually said, well, you know, you can just, like girls, right? It's a choice. So just live righteously and just, you know, do what you're supposed to do kind of thing. And it was his naiveness in honesty. He's a very loving man, but he had no idea how to handle this as a leader. There's not a lot of training. There's not a lot of information given to our leaders. And I think it's us as a community. For me personally, I am honored to be a voice within my religion. I'm honored to be a heart within my religion, to stand up for those who are within those communities and within our communities that are quiet and that are suffering quietly and don't know that it's okay. In a testimony meeting about a year ago, I talked about my gay son. I talked about my love for him. And I talked about the importance of living a Christ-like life includes loving everyone as he did. And I cannot tell you the amount of people who came up to me after that meeting. It could have gone one or two ways, and I was braced for both. But I can't tell you how many came up to me and thanked me for being a voice, that they have a gay brother, or, oh, yeah, I have a transgender sister, and I can't talk to anybody about it because it's a taboo subject in the church. And so I think it's just the heart, leading with the heart, being that tattooed forehead of leading with love.
I kind of have a little bit of an experience and then a question for Mama Dragons in general. Hearing a lot about leaders who don't know anything, they don't have any resources. The Mama Dragons a while ago challenged Mama Dragons to go out and do something. Speak up in a fasten testimony meeting, and if you don't go to church, do something else. I don't go to church, so I did something else. I called my bishop up or emailed my bishop and said, what are we doing in the ward? And I ended up meeting with the bishop and the stake president a week and a half ago, and the stake president was just eating up any kind of resources I could point him to, whether it was I'll walk with you or Mormon Building Bridges or Mormon Mental Health Association. So what I'm kind of wondering is, as a Mama Dragons group, can we put together a resource packet and send it to all the stake presidents that we can get, you know, their information to be able to send it to them? And that way, not all of them are going to receive it, but maybe some of them would. So anybody has a response to that?
I know Jen Blair was doing that, wasn't she? She was one of our Mama Dragons, was putting together packages and sending them to different church leaders. I know that I met with my bishop, and I gave him the Mama Dragon Story Project book. I haven't gotten it back yet. I told him it was just on loan, but maybe he's just going to keep it, which would be fine with me. So I think that, you know, I mean, that's a project that some Mama Dragon could take on. I don't know anything about that.
Kimberly?
If I can just really quickly say that.
Affirmation has it that you can download on their website. Affirmation.org is a packet specifically made with all the resources there, including family acceptance.
So let me say that in the mic so it's recorded. Jody Hansen is saying that affirmation.org, you can go there and you can download the Family Acceptance Project PDF file as well as what else? I'm sorry. Resource packet for your local leaders.
By the way, bless you.
And thank you. By the way, I was the one that issued that challenge.
Thank you. Yeah.
So, and I'm glad that it did, because, you know, you throw something like that out there and you're like, oh crap, they're going to hate me. But I think one of the real beauties of the Mama Dragons is that there is no central leadership. We don't elect a president. We don't have a treasurer. We don't have a code of tenets that we follow. Oh, wait, we do. I'm sorry. It's one item long, and it is love. So we don't care how the Mama Dragon approaches their leaders. There's no right way. There's no wrong way. Only you know your bishop. Only you know your stake president. Only you know your Relief Society president or elders, quorum, or high priest group leader. Only you know how to best approach them. So within this context of personal revelation, perhaps asking a higher power how to proceed is one of the best ways that you can decide for yourself how you want to evangelize this idea of love. Isn't that interesting that we need to try to convince our church leaders that love is the answer? I believe that the person that we identify in the title of the church, oh yeah, Jesus Christ, his main thing was, first and greatest commandment is? Love who? God. Second commandment is what? Love your neighbor. Third is as yourself. There's three items of love in that first and great commandment. Love, love, and love. Why do we forget that? How is it that we forget that? Do we have time for one more question, one or two more questions? Okay, get up here, Lisa.
Two things is that, unfortunately, we have leader roulette in the church. And so sometimes you have a fabulous bishop and a fabulous stake president, and sometimes you don't. And then the other thing that I just wanted to talk about for just a second was the pain. I mean, we saw the pain, and we've seen the pain on mothers' faces and in mothers' hearts, but that pain is because of the pain for our children. So I don't want that pain to be displaced, like our pain is greater. Like that was my first thing when my son said I'm gay, is I thought about his past and I thought about his future. And I thought about the painful things that he would experience from things that people would say. And unfortunately, like we haven't talked about the policy change, that was very painful at our house. My gay son stood at the end of our bar and said, those 15 men think that I'm worse than a child molester. I'm worse than a murderer. You know, I'm worse than any of the most horrible criminals in the world because they haven't made a policy change about anybody else but me. So the pain that my child experiences is real and it's big, and that's the, I want to protect him from everyone and every organization that would spew out hate towards him.
Thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just for posterity, since this session is being recorded, that was Lisa Kies. Thank you, Lisa. And, oh my gosh. Kelly.
I'm her girlfriend, for crying out loud. Just kidding. It's Kelly. She knows who I am. She's teasing you.
That's right. So the other thing that's wonderful about these mama dragons, do you see how easy it is for them to just jump up and speak their truth?
I have a beautiful 14-year-old daughter.
And she came out about 9 months ago as transgender. And that was hard. That was hard. I had another child who I thought might be gay. That was nothing. I was like, that, no big deal, whatever. But transgender, I didn't even know where to go with that. She's been suicidal since the age of 8. And so when she came out and it came out fully, I said, what would you say if someone told you you're being deceived by the devil? Because that's what a family member had been told who came out as transgender. And what would you say if somebody told you it's okay to feel that way, but you have to live in a boy's body for the rest of your life?
For eternity.
And she said, I would want to die. And I knew at that moment that I had no other choice than to fully love and support her. And we both prayed about it, and we both knew that that's what God wanted for her. And so that's the path that we're on. She's so much happier now. She's on blockers and hormones now, and she's so much happier. This was a child who refused to look in the mirror because she hated the way she looked. And now she's like, I like the way I look. So, yeah, love. That's from Kelly, your friend.
Kelly McPhee.
Yes, thank you.
Should we do one more? One more? One more. Question. Oh, I'm taking back all those gold stars. Yes, go.
So it kind of seems, just from my perspective, I like Mormon history, but it seems like oftentimes it requires a lot of grassroots movement, or it requires some sort of political shift in order for a revelation to come about. I really am extremely appreciative of what you are doing as Mama Dragons. I mean, It's the grassroots movement that needs to happen in the church. But, of course, all of you have more of a finger on the pulse of the church and the leadership than most of us that aren't exposed to this. So I kind of want to open it up. You know, how long do you think it will take for the church to actually come up with some kind of divine revelation that this will be? I mean,
I say 50 years.
100.
You've had your turn.
I was just watching a documentary about, it was called My White Idaho or something like that, and they were talking about how long it was going to take to have, and I apologize for even, to have the racism that is sometimes there in Idaho to leave, and one of the men was saying, as soon as our generation dies out, it's going to be gone. And I hate to say that, but I feel like in about 20 years, I think that there will be a big change, but it's going to be in about 20 years, because I think the current generation of church leaders is going to have to, and I hate to say this, they're going to have to die, and before something will happen. I think that the newer generation, they get it a little bit more, and I don't think they'll let it happen. That's my feeling about it.
I absolutely agree. I feel like we're already seeing changes. They're very slow as change happens in the church, very slow. But as you know, bird's eye and personal revelation, I know Heavenly Father is very aware of this, and there's a lot of learning for all of us in this process. And that's when the heart comes in and the trust comes in for me. And I do know that our kids now, it's not a big deal to them. Oh, so you're gay. Big deal. I know, because I hang around with a lot of different kinds of kids because of my own connection to my child, and I love all his friends in the major diversity in all of them, straight, gay, transgender. We got them all in our house. And they all don't care. They don't care about those things. Those are just labels. And this next generation coming up gets it far deeper than the ones that are currently in charge. So it will shift. I know it will.
So let's do Cynthia, then Lisa, and Ash. I think we're out of
time. I just wanted to say that I don't know if and when the church leadership will ever change policies for LGBTQIA people, but I've changed my
family history by all of us leaving the church. And for me, that's the kind of change that was necessary in my family. I'm sorry if that offends anybody who's still active at church, but that was the answer for me and the brethren. Good luck to them, and good luck to faithful members of the church who are trying to make it work. I could not do that. My mind cannot connect the two at all, because there's a huge disconnect there with the absolute absence of love there. So that's my personal experience with it. So
I think that we've seen, you know, marriage, you know, same-sex marriage become legal in the United States, and that has, I mean, 5 years ago, would you have thought that that would have happened? I mean, it's such an evolution in the country, not just in the Mormon Church, but in the minds of people in the country and in the world. And people are evolving, and I think this evolution is happening much quicker than a lot of other evolutions happen, much quicker than acceptance of Black people, of African American people. I think this is happening very quickly, and I see it in my ward, and I am always so happy to have conversations with people, and I love it when they're uncomfortable, because that means they're changing. That means that they're evolving as they're uncomfortable, because we don't change unless we are uncomfortable. And so I think it's, I don't know, I'm not going to put a year on it, but I think it's happening, and we're all part of it, and I think that's really exciting.
Ladies and gentlemen, I really, really, really appreciate your time. I do. Unfortunately, our hour is done, and being one who's waited for a session that's gone over, I won't do that to our next presenter. Thank you for coming.